I'd like to welcome Corey Wolverton to the Heart of Connection podcast. Corey is a social worker by trade, and it's lovely to be able to have a conversation with a fellow social worker, and particularly a male social worker. There's not many of us around, mate, in the social work field.
No, I'd say it's 90% women, which is not a bad thing. It's, I think probably men have had enough of a say, so it's probably not the worst.
Yeah, I think how we've said it is probably really needs to change.
In social work?
No, in the patriarchy world that we've lived in.
Yeah, absolutely.
The social conditioning that this male patriarchy that has had over the course of the centuries. I think it's prohibiting our ascension to evolving as into our true nature.
Yeah, I think the most difficult part of that transition is the fact that when you've got power the way that men have over, you know, millennium, not wanting to give that up. It's in some ways, I guess, it's understandable. Why would you want to give that up when you've got privilege and entitlement and stuff like that? But in other ways, obviously, it's time to actually start making some inroads. We say we do a lot with regards to that, but really, when you look at like the number of women in politics, the number of women that are in charge of CEOs and companies, it's just way too low still. So a lot of work to do around that.
Now, Corey, I met you through, I was at the Geelong's Transition Streets in Geelong Festival a couple of Sundays ago. You were at a Greens gathering?
Yeah.
Forum, whatever it was.
Yeah.
I introduced myself to you to touch base to see if I could invite you to the podcast.
Yeah, and yeah, so I guess outside of social work, I'm pretty involved with the Greens and predominantly the Bellarine Greens. I'm the convener for them out there. And I guess like our main thing with the Bellarine Greens, not so much the whole Greens, is community participation and being an active part of the community. We try to, we get out there and we try to plant trees. We have days where we just pick up litter on the beach, which is quite meditative. If you know, it's, you know, even in the kids even love it. Do you know what I mean? They go into this zone, and the same with planting trees, same with weeding, you know, it's something you can do. It's social. You feel good after it, and I think it's actually good for the soul as well. So, yeah. Right,
now, coming in terms of the topics that we have conversations with is connection to self, others, and all that is. It sounds through your work with the Greens, that's connecting to self and others. In terms of connecting to yourself, how does Corey connect to himself physically, emotionally, or physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually?
Yeah, I think it's something that's actually quite difficult, like really, and for myself, where it's horrible to think that in this day and age that you're so structured that you actually have to make and book in time to do that. But I guess when you have a job and you're an active member of a community and you've got a family, you know, I still study. I'm doing my master's at the moment. You almost do have to make that time. And I think for myself, I would I do that through meditation where I'm present, and whether that's doing the dishes, walking to work. Obviously surfing is a big part for me, being present in that, and that for me means when I'm walking, I'm practicing walking, you know, when I'm doing the dishes, I'm practicing dishes, and I'm actively trying to enjoy that, whatever I'm kind of doing. I think that goes a long way. You know, if you're enjoying what you're doing, whatever it is, and you're doing it presently, then it's gonna be okay, generally.
When you connect in, as you are bringing the presence, what do you notice with inside yourself? How do you notice a difference with what's going on in your inner world?
Yeah, well, I think like physically, I think you know, your breathing changes, probably your heart rate probably starts to drop. I think a lot of the time, particularly with, you know, anxieties and things like this, you live in a heightened state. So physically, I think your blood pressure starts to probably drop, and then I think your mind kind of changes to the exact movement or thing that you're doing, basically. And obviously nobody's perfect. Your mind will, you know, bounce around a little bit, and that's, I think you have to be comfortable with that. And then you just, I think from there, you know, that's just giving you that little bit of time to actually connect with yourself, whatever that kind of feels and looks like for you.
When you connect to yourself, do you notice you connect to your heart?
Yeah, like I guess it's difficult because I guess you know, you've got the mind and the heart, and they're in lots of ways they're two different things, but I guess you kind of are, yeah, in that more relaxed kind of state. But I don't know, for me it's probably different for every single person, whether that's like you know, taking the time just to be grateful and to remember to love, and that you are loved is probably where that connection is for me.
Do you think the journey of men, we were talking before about the patriarchal system that men created, have we, in that creation, has that facilitated us men disconnecting from our hearts and our inner self?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think obviously, like, you know, masculinity, it's just a construct, isn't it? Like, we've constructed it, and we can dismantle it as well. Every time that we enter into a new place, into a new context with a new person, we're constructing that masculinity, and us right now, we're constructing that as we speak. You know, I'm going to act differently in front of different people, whether it's friends, work colleagues, people I don't know as well. And I think with regards to that, there is a particular type of masculinity, and each culture is different. And in Australia, it probably does limit our ability to be emotionally available, to other people and to ourselves as well, which is, you know, it's sad in a way, but in another way, I think as a society, we are getting better at it, and we are becoming more open. You know, as I saw a stat the other day that said in 1982 or something like that, 3% of fathers had changed a nappy, and today it's like, you know, 80 or 90%. So just the ability to actually connect with your child, like in those types of context scenarios, is increasing, but it is hard. Yeah.
So in working with men, I will say that we have a sensitive side to ourselves, and, you know, we were emotional beings till about 5 years old. Then it's the old toxic masculinity. I'll, you know, don't cry. You know, that social construction, don't cry, I'll give you something to cry about. I'm wondering whether that's taught us men to disconnect from that essence of ourselves, and what impact has that then facilitated on men connecting to each other?
Yeah, well, I think it's probably in that the ability to be open with another. Like, if you are taught that from a young age, then you will close off, and you'll try to limit vulnerabilities. And I think as far as masculinity and that construct in our society, that it's really important for men to limit those vulnerabilities, to look tough, you know, to look like we're in control, because that's what masculinity is. It's bravado and strength and control and toughness and risk takings and all those things can be positive things, you know, to be confident and to be strong and to be in control. They're great attributes of any person. But I find that femininity has those things as well. You know, it's perception and it's construct. So to say that those things aren't positive, and then the same with what we regard as feminine attributes, which is, you know, caring and nurturing and, you know, emotional connectedness, they can be really beautiful things for for men to have as well, and for masculinity to really, you know, be a part of masculinity.
I wonder whether men are screaming for that sort of connection at some level.
I think so. I think it's funny as men that we can't just meet up with nothing to do. We need to be catching up to be going fishing. Do you know what I mean? Like, we need to have a hobby, you know?
Yeah, that's the connection, is the doing.
Yeah.
In the doing, we connect.
Yep.
And when there's not the doing, yeah, I'm wondering whether that's, oh my.
Yeah, or what is this? You know, if we're not fishing or, you know, fixing a motorbike or, you know, kicking the footy, you know, as a man, you're never actually catching up to drink beer. Like, you're catching up to speak with another person, to connect.
It's interesting, as you're sharing that, the term presence in the not doing, are we avoiding just an incredible state of presence?
Yeah, like the ability to just to sit with another. Or to see, and that comes back eventually, to be able to sit with yourself, to be comfortable with yourself. And I guess when you do, you know, say you were to walk out this room right now and go and just sit on the ground, and you know, not with your legs crossed, with your, you know, fingers in the O kind of arm position, just to sit there, like, would you be comfortable with sitting there in silence for 10 minutes? And like, for a lot of people, and even like myself, and I think, no, because you're going to have to sit there and be with your thoughts for a little bit. And if you're anxious and stressed and there's a lot going on, that's going to be really hard to actually do. But if your mind is constantly, you know, concentrating on other things, then you're not actually ever being able to do that, which is probably really an issue, because you're not really, yeah.
And I'm wondering what impact that busy mind, that busy intellectual mind, has on our connections to ourselves and our connection to others.
Yeah, I think basically you're not actually managing and reflecting. You know, you're not taking the time to do it, and you'll probably look back in 3 or 4 years' time and feel like you've either been on autopilot, or you've missed a big chunk of life, or you'll probably be emotionally fatigued, to be honest. And I think, you know, there's obvious masking agents that do that, alcohol and drugs and stuff, but just work and, you know, being that and letting that into your life is also masking really what's really going on for you.
Can men's anger and rage be a masking agent?
Yeah, I absolutely think, it can be. I think, as men, our ability to emotionally regulate is something that actually can be learned, and you can get better at it. And, you know, I like to always say, like, you know, do you want to feel like that, you know, that angry? And how long does it take for you to feel better after you have that feeling? You know, it's not a nice feeling, and you know, your body goes into, you know, for a week after, you'd still be feeling impacted by feeling like that. And I think, you know, just to get angry about something rather than actually deal with it. I'm a big fan of when you do get angry, just trying to understand the other person. Like, why, you know, if they've just walked up and a random person's yelled at you in the street, you instead of being angry, just be like, wow, what's going on for you that would make you just yell at me like that? Like, there must be some really horrible things. And when you have understanding of another, it becomes very hard to get angry at other people, because you almost feel sorry for them straight away, and you want to help. And I think that's where understanding is where that kind of starts.
And I wonder whether it's a lot of the male social condition that's facilitated men's emotional dysregulation.
Yeah, I think it probably would be, to be honest. And it's like we were saying before, just the fact that you're told as a young boy, you know, to man up and not to cry and to be tough. It's probably got a lot to do with you know, and it's a long game to overturn those things. But like I'm saying, a lot of, like, to have resilience and to be strong is not a bad thing. you know.
With men, I call that the spirit warrior. And the energy of the spirit warrior is able to hold that space, has that resilience, but also has the inner connection to themselves.
Mm.
And they're very in check with it.
Yeah.
And it's a very empowering place to be, not having power over, it's having sharing power with.
Yeah, yeah.
And the power comes from a deep, you know, a deeper source within the self.
Yeah, yeah. And not, and it's easy sometimes to just get angry, you know. It's probably the easiest path, to be honest.
Habitual.
Yeah, you're just like, oh, I'll just get angry about this. I won't deal with it. You know, I won't understand you. I'll just yell at you, cool. You know.
And bringing the conversation to connection to others, how does Corey notice and process and connect? What's his, how does he do it?
Yeah, well, again, going back, I think to just understanding, like a really big fan of a particular book, The Heart of the Buddha by, I think, Thich Nhat Hanh. Yeah, I think a lot of my philosophy probably comes from that book, that understanding another person is how I actually connect to another person, is just why are they acting in that particular way, whether it be happy or angry or sad. And in when you have understanding of another, you all of a sudden you don't react in any kind of I guess a dramatic way. You're acting always in a compassionate way, which is you know, I think if everybody kind of at least attempted to do that, it would be a very, very, very beautiful world, you know.
Compassion, do you believe that comes from your heart, or where do you believe that comes from in your being?
For me, where does it come from? It's a really good question, because, like, for me, it's just... It's somewhere so like deep within in my whole philosophy around like social justice and fairness and equity, and I've spoken to other people about this, that for me it's almost the fact that I can't stand other people devaluing and getting won over more vulnerable people. It just, I can't stand it. And it's just something so deep within me that drives me, you know, to care and to do those things.
I'm wondering whether they've disowned their own vulnerability, that they need to have power over others.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? It's funny when you look at some ideologies and some... yeah, so I guess in particular context and stuff, you know, more severe context, maybe there's some sort of place when there's survival, but not in our society, you know.
Right. And, it's really wonderful that, you know, the professor of social work, I think she's in Texas, Bren Brown, she talks about there being courage in vulnerability.
Yeah.
You know, as men, you know, I'm wondering whether if we can start to change the ideology and begin to see it, there's power and courage in our vulnerability, sharing our vulnerability with each other, not to have power over each other. We've all got a vulnerability.
Yeah, yeah, and to think that some people aren't vulnerable, even if they don't appear, is bullshit, basically, isn't it? Like, really, everyone's got vulnerabilities and fears and anxieties. Some people just have a better ability to look like they're dealing with everything.
And as a community connecting together, how would we then address the collective vulnerability in that community connection?
Yeah, well, like, I think it's just admitting that it's fragile. And I think, like, this week in particular, we talked about the virus before starting the podcast, but, you know, democracy is fragile, social connection is fragile, health is fragile, and it just, the economy is fragile, you know. It's the, and these are some of them are man you know, person made constructs, and you know, at the end of the day, we have to actually care for for those things that that are important to us, whether it is our health, whether it is social connection, or whether it is the economy. Like, it's very fragile, and you have to care for these things, or like we've seen this week, things can really turn around fast. And as a social conscious, it breeds anxiety. But I think when you move through these types of things and together, and hopefully we can kind of be more aware in the future.
Yeah, and I wonder collectively, if we connect collectively, can we then make a difference? Instead of siloing it within an individual fear and an individual, we've all got those fears.
Yeah.
And if we collectively connect, be open-hearted and open-minded about each and every individual fears, whether collectively we can make a difference.
Yeah, I definitely would hope that. I think that the last, not to go into too much theory, but the last 25 years of pretty solid neoliberal policies and individualism has created a bunch of individuals that see each other as competitors within society. So, for an 18, 19 year old, competes for job security, competes for housing, competes for, and at the moment competing for food. Do you know what I mean? Competing, constant competition. And that's kind of what I feel like the government kind of wants us to compete so that we strive for more. But what it's done is broken down that ability to be a collective. And that's what's quite concerning to me.
And the ability to connect to each other?
Yeah, yeah, 100%. We're not connecting as well, because we're almost seeing each other as, well, I'm in competition with you. And if I was to take that time to connect, then how I might be giving up that time to get on top of you, sort of thing. And I think, again, what the last couple of weeks has kind of shown, and I think only now we're kind of realizing we're all actually in this together. So, it's important for us to actually work together through this type of stuff as a collective, as a society, just to bring the anxiety level down a little bit, because you just kind of perpetuate it, don't you, really?
We do. Moving the conversation through to the all that is whatever that is to you, the Buddha nature within. How do you find yourself connecting to your all that is, whatever that is for you?
Yeah, I guess it's in those, for me, it's in those moments. Do you know what I mean? When you're in nature, when you're with family, and you really you take a deep breath in and you're just like, this is nice. Do you know what I mean?
As you're sharing that with me, what was happening in your body as you were connecting to that?
Yeah, I guess even, on the weekend, I was down the southwest on the coast with family, just at the beach. It was windy. It was wet. The wind's cold on your face. And you're actually just taking it in, and you're saying, right now is as good as it gets.
Do you come within? Well, yeah, do you deepen within yourself?
I think, absolutely, I think. And I think in times when you're at work or you're rushing around, you can actually move back to that space and just say, yeah, that's actually what it's all about, and that's what I work towards to have, and just to be there.
When you're, I call that anchoring back in there. When you anchor back in there, what do you notice happens in your body and your mind and your heart?
I think it slows, things slow again, and you get a little bit of, about what's actually important, it just drags you back to actual reality. And, what is important really for me is, connection to nature, and a connection to family and love. And, I think you physically, you slow back down, your mind slows a little bit, and
Do you come into an alignment?
I think so. Probably not to the point where you would if you were in that. That takes a lot of practice.
Yeah. When you're out in nature, what happens to Corey out in nature?
In the nature? In nature? Yeah, I I just think it just slows down a little bit, and you kind of just see what's important. I think I lived in Adelaide for a long time. I didn't have a car. Do you know what I mean? I was a chef. And then, you know, I probably went a couple of years without even leaving the city. And then one day I was like, what am I doing? You know, what is this? You know, like I haven't, and I just like, you know, I drove back out to where I kind of grew up and, you know, looked up, you know, watched the sunset, looked up at the stars, and I was like, this is insane. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is what it's actually all about. So yeah, just taking, and you're just like, oh yeah. And that sometimes it's just that moment.
Does your sense of self, when you're out in the bush like that, out in nature, does your sense of self dissolve? Do you...
Yeah.
All the social constructs that we make, all the thinking, all the... You know, does it just dissolve just for that moment? It's like you merge with nature?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
When you're out surfing, you're on that board, you're on that wave... How much of a flow state, you know, are you a part of that wave?
Yeah, I think 100%. I think you're never more present than, lucky for people who surf. You're never more present than when you're actually on that wave. And I think taking the time as well when you're just sitting out there just to shut, you know, turn it off, just have a look back at the beach and just be like just a little bit inspired. It's super important. And yeah, when you're on that wave, that's the only thing you're really thinking, isn't it? It's like you're thinking, I'm looking down, I'm thinking about pretty much the next move I'm going to make, thinking how much wave I have, not thinking about anything else. And it's a really lucky place to kind of, to be. Not everyone surfs, but I think everyone hopefully has that thing for them.
Is it an amazing reboot?
Oh yeah, it's almost like a drug, really, isn't it? Like you come in, and you know, my wife's like, you know, 3 hours later, my wife's like, "What's going on with you?" And I'm just like, I went for a surf, you know. She's like, "Oh yeah, you know, oh yeah, you know." And then when you haven't got out for a while, you haven't actually, you know, gone for a walk through the scrub or something like that. I think sometimes you don't even notice it until you're like, "Oh shit, I've got to get out there and do it."
And it's really interesting with this question that in a lot of the conversations, when people connect to that all that is, doesn't matter whether it's through surfing or nature or bike riding, when they're in that space, I ask them, what happens to your mental health and your emotional health when you're in there?
Yeah, there's a spike. There's an improvement. Do you know what I mean? Like every single time, you know, how many times do you... I think the question is more like, how many times do you go for a surf and come back feeling worse? Not very often. Or how many times do you go for a bushwalk and come out feeling worse? Or go for a walk with your, you know, your kid and you feel worse? Most of the time you come back and you're feeling, you know, a lot better than when you went in.
What would happen if we were able to bottle that and use it as a pharmaceutical?
I think people would overdose, to be honest. And then Big Pharma would make... the rich would only have access. I think that's... Isn't that capitalism?
But it is there. It is... We can bottle it, except the bottling is taking our human form into it and reconnecting to it. And I'm wondering, yeah, what impact that would have on the well-being and the overall connectedness to us as human beings in this busy world.
Yeah, I think we're lucky enough in Australia that we get to have this conversation about you know, actually taking the time to be present and to be like that. I think, you know, there's a large contingent of the world's population that probably is just in survival mode. So the fact that we get to have this conversation, I feel pretty privileged to have that. Yeah, you know, be a much happier place.
Is there any advice that you would offer young men coming through?
Yeah.
From the lessons learned of connection to self, others and all that is?
Yeah, I think it's like for me, it was like finding those, I guess, but probably particularly men, but people that are probably a little older than you finding, and even if it's not actively saying you're going to be my mentor, but just, you know, asking questions and saying, like, you know, what, you know, I guess for me, there's been a few people in my life that were like, you should read this book, you know, Paulo Coelho, The Alchemist, or something like that, you know, or, you know, something by Tolstoy or something like that, or, you know, Huxley or something like that. It changes you a little bit. And, you know, I think you have those people and they kind of give you a little bit of direction that probably would have taken you a lot longer to work out. But just like, I guess, when you're in, particularly in your teenage years, being really aware and that there's people around you that have got just a wealth of knowledge that they've built up over time. And there's people that lead you astray as well. You know, that's life. But I think listening to those people, super important. And, you know, sometimes, well, what am I, like in my 30s? I've only worked that out very, very recently, that there was people in my life that were really important. And I'm saying, you know, some of these people in my life are fractions, you know, small, but really important in moving one way or the other and allowing me to do what I want to do, pretty much.
It's really lovely to be able to connect with you as a male today, to begin to have for men to start to explore these sorts of conversations, to connection to self, others and all that is. I think if we men can really start connecting deep within ourselves, connecting to that innate, you know, spirit essence, which is a power. It's not power over, it's power within. I think we can move and shift a lot of the social consciousness and, you know, a lot of that old toxic masculinity that has been around. We can make a change to that and look forward to you younger men taking that and changing that old chalice into a new enriched chalice.
Yeah, I hope so. I think, like you're saying, it is it's a full social conscious kind of shift, and it's a societal shift. And you know, to be honest, it's probably not ever going to happen in my generation, but I think you know, if we can just continue to set the groundwork for the next generation, hopefully my kids, you know, I teach my young girl to be fierce and to not take crap, you know, and I teach my young boy to be respectful. Mm-hmm. And that's all I can really do. The rest is up to them, I guess.
Well done, Corey.
Thank you very much.
Lovely to meet you and lovely to have the conversation with you.
Yeah.
Namaste.
Thank you very much. Been great.